Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 93, with repeat guest Brett Singer. His topic today is eating to increase lean body mass. He's a registered dietitian for the Memorial Hermann Ironman Sports Medicine Institute. Brett joins us again because he's a presenter at the 13th annual Memorial Hermann Sports Medicine Update. Again, we're thanking Bob, Marley, and everybody there at Memorial Hermann for allowing us to record the sessions and then interview the guests. So Brett's talking about how to increase lean body mass today. The first part, again, will be his live session. The second part will be the interview conducted by Dr. Mark Knobloch, one of the program directors at the University of Houston Masters of Athletic Training Program. And, of course, Dr. Yellen gives you plenty of opportunity to get that website. So any of these episodes you listen to, you'll hear plenty about the U of H Masters of Athletic Training, but I couldn't do this thing without them. So I really want to thank those two guys there for all the interviews and all the help they did. Also, Jasmine Dozal for all her recording and the Sports Medicine Broadcast. Hoping to be live with CEU webinars coming in September. That way you can log in and do your get your CEUs through there, and it'll be tracked on there and kept that way. So we're looking to bring that back to you. If you want to connect with us, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com almost every single Wednesday. But all the information is there on Sports Medicine Broadcast. We're always looking for interaction from guests, what you want to hear about, who you want to hear from, if you want to be a guest, if you got a friend that wants to be a guest, or you got a friend that you think should be on here, let us know and we'll do our best to schedule them, put them in there, and then find it in iTunes, rate it in there, and it helps other people find it. So that way they can download the podcast, and you can also tweet about it, make sure people know about the live events that are eligible for CEUs. So again, Sports Medicine Broadcast. I'm Jeremy Jackson. Thanks for listening, and enjoy Brett Singer.
So, I am a registered, licensed, and board-certified sports dietitian. Today, I'm going to be talking about how to eat in order to gain lean body mass. So how many of your students, your athletes, are coming to you saying they want to gain weight, they want to gain muscle? That's basically all of them, right? And the rule is they're going to eat PB&J and drink protein shakes, right? That's basically what the answer is to gain body mass. Okay, hopefully I'm going to clarify some better strategies for you and for them, and hopefully I'm going to make it a little bit more simple and give you some better explanations. So, the primary objective when you're trying to gain lean body mass is, one, make sure you're taking in enough calories. So increase your caloric intake. Two, it's adding to protein and doing it correctly. So taking in not only enough protein, but taking in quality protein and spacing it out correctly. And then finally, three, combining those things with an appropriate resistance training program. You can work out all you want, or you can eat all you want. If you don't do the two of them correctly, you're not going to gain muscle mass. It's not going to work the way you want it to. So the common mistakes that I see is that kids are taking in enough calories, but they're not quality calories. They're taking in enough protein, but it's not quality protein. They're not taking it in spaced out evenly. They're taking it mostly no matter how the meal of the day. They're generally skipping a lot of meals also. And then there's an over-reliance on supplementation, whether it's pre-workout drinks, whether it's protein or whatever it may be. They're not focusing enough on the workout and the diet, and they're focusing too much on what seems the quick way to gain as much muscle mass as possible. The first one is really, really easy. It's pretty simple to add calories. They may say they're eating all the time, but they're probably not. So if you ask them what they're eating, whatever it is that they're doing, you can always find a way to increase their caloric intake. You can do that by adding in whole grains, adding in starchy vegetables, adding in fruits. You can do it by incorporating more fats, especially healthy fats, almonds, walnuts, nut butters, fatty fish, whatever it may be. Incorporating more fat, even going whole milk or 2% milk as opposed to skim or 1% is an easy way to add more calories to their diet. And then finally, knowing the appropriate time to use recovery drinks and sports drinks. They're okay to use. Athletes shouldn't be fearful of them. They don't need to be drinking Gatorade all day long, but they can have Gatorade during practice or during games. They can use recovery drinks after workouts or after games. But just knowing the appropriate time when to use those. So I am going to provide you with some numbers. So if you want to follow along and do this on yourself for the calculations, or if you want to follow along with the calculations I'll be doing, you can feel free to get your phone out. So I'll probably be the one presenter that says, please get on your phone and work with me as we're going to do this. But so, dietitians working kilograms. So the way to go about doing it is divide your weight by 2.2, and that converts your weight to kilograms. And from here on out, that's what I'm going to be basing calculations off of. In this case, I'm going to be using a 140-pound athlete for most of my calculations. And at the very end of your packet where I give examples, that's what it's based off of. So carbohydrates, they come in a number of different forms, and you know what they are, but you'll get them in grains, you'll get them in fruits, you'll get them in starchy vegetables, dairy, etc. How many carbs do we need? For basically any of your athletes, they're growing, they're maturing, they're exercising all the time, even when they're not playing, they're still pretty active. I would suggest, pretty much for all of them, between 6 to 10 grams per kilogram of carbohydrates. So in the case of 140-pound athlete, you divide that by 2.2, multiply that by 6, and that gives you 380. And then multiply that by 10, and it gives you roughly 640. So somewhere between that range. That's a very broad gap, that you kind of start with one area, depending on how active they are, and then you work your way up. But 6 to 10 grams per kilogram of carbohydrates, it's a pretty fair range. For protein, we have a number of different sources. I divide them out into a couple different groups. So I have our quality sources, and these are going to be things like fish, meat, dairy, soy, whey protein, eggs. Those are quality proteins. Why I call them quality proteins is because they are complete proteins. They contain all the essential and non-essential amino acids. It takes a very minimal amount of these to help with growth. Compared to these are our alternative sources of protein. These are things that vegetarians might have. Grains, nuts, beans. These are also quality sources of protein, but they don't contain all the complete or all the amino acids. It's going to take more of these in a meal to help it grow. So it's going to take a bit more. That's why I prefer the quality sources of
these. Turn into a mushroom oil.
So quality matters. What we're discovering is that leucine is the key amino acid, and you may have heard of this before. We're starting to hear more and more about it. Leucine is found prominently in those complete proteins, such as your dairy, your eggs, your meat. Leucine is what we call the trigger point for growth. So when someone works out and they try and have something to help build muscle mass afterwards, leucine is what's going to trigger that growth and initiate that. If they try and have just a whole bunch of peanut butter right after a workout, they're not going to get enough leucine. And it's going to have a hard time triggering and jump-starting the growth for the muscle protein synthesis for that workout. Now, can you take only leucine? No, it doesn't work that way. Leucine is the trigger point to start the growth, but it takes the rest of those essential amino acids to help continue with that growth. So that's why whey protein or meats or eggs or dairy can be beneficial. It's because each of those are going to help because they provide not only leucine and an ample amount, but also the other essential amino acids. Usually what we recommend is about 2.5 to 3 grams of leucine. Well, what does that mean? If you're taking in roughly 20 to 30 grams of protein from dairy, such as a cup of yogurt, or 20 ounces of milk, or 3 to 5 ounces of meat, or 3 to 5 eggs, that's all going to be enough leucine and enough protein to help to grow. So for the protein amount or protein needs for an athlete, for someone trying to add lean body mass, 1.6 to 1.8 grams per kilogram is about the maximum that they need per meal or per day. I'm okay with kids going up to around 2 grams per pound or 2 grams per kilogram, but that's about it. Really, 1.6 to 1.8 is what research shows to be the final point of growth. Per meal now, it's 0.3 grams per kilogram. So that's different from what we're used to. We're used to just piling in all of our protein for dinner. But what I'd like you to do is maximize out at about 0.3 grams per kilogram per meal. So for most athletes, that's going to be about 20 to 30 grams of protein in a meal. No more than that. They don't really need any more. So too much protein. There's been a number of studies on this. When you talk to your athletes, I guarantee you they'll tell you that they need a gram per pound of body weight. So in other words, 2.2 grams per kilogram. Or some magazines or people at the gym or GNC or other nutrition stores will tell them they should be taking in as much as 2 grams per pound of body weight. They did a study about 2 months ago, I think, this group right here. And it was, they gave 5 times the recommended dose of protein and compared that to the normal standard 1.8 grams per kilogram. So essentially they gave 2 grams per pound of body weight. Those two groups were doing resistance training. No difference at all between lean body mass between those two groups and growth. So there is a break point of too much protein, but that's not going to do enough. What's happening for those groups that are taking in way too much is they're essentially oxidizing it and excreting it out through the urine. So they're not utilizing the way they think they should. So your athletes don't need to be taking up nearly as much as they believe they should. Now the other thought, they've been doing research on how much protein can we handle in a meal. So what the thought process was, we'll give 10 grams versus 20 grams versus 40 grams of protein after a workout, see what happens. And so in each of these research studies, what we've seen is for most groups, when they take in 20 grams, there's no difference in effect compared to the group that takes 40 grams. So you can get just as much out of the 20 as you can of the 40. So the same thing is happening. They're essentially oxidizing it and excreting it. So for most groups, what we've come up with is about 0.25 to 0.3 grams per kilogram per meal is about the max that they should be taking in. And there's one caveat to that in a little bit, and I'll get to that in a minute. So for growth, think about net protein balance. Net protein balance is the difference between muscle protein synthesis, so building muscle, and muscle protein breakdown, so breakdown of muscle tissue. You are constantly in protein turnover throughout the day. When you're working out, you're protein turnover. So you're not only building, but you're also breaking down muscle mass. Your 24-hour day is constantly filled with that. In order to gain lean body mass, what you want to do is be in that muscle protein synthesis phase more often or for a greater portion of the day than you are in net or in muscle protein breakdown. That's going to create a positive protein balance, and that's going to create a growth of lean body mass. Every 3 to 4, or every time you have a meal, you, assuming that that meal is a quality meal, you will be in muscle protein synthesis for about 3 to 4 hours. So with that in mind, you should be having a meal every 3 to 4 hours for growth. Mm-hmm. Now think of your high school athlete, many of whom are not having breakfast, many of whom are skipping meals, many of whom are cramming all of their protein intake into 4 or 5 hours of the day. If your goal is to stay in muscle protein synthesis for as much of the day as possible, spacing your protein out in smaller amounts every 3 to 4 hours is going to be a better bet. Another thing, another common misconception, is that most people tend to believe that the post-workout recovery drink is the only thing that's important. What we know now is that there's about a 3 to 4 hour anabolic window after a workout, meaning that if your athletes work out at 7 a.m. this summer, and they do resistance training, their 7 p.m. meal is every bit as important as that 7 a.m. recovery drink that they're having. So when they're having pizza at 7 p.m., they're basically preventing themselves from growing at that time. So they should be focusing more on the full 24 hours after that workout as opposed to just that first 30 minutes that they're always so focused on. So with that in mind, what about during sleep? So what we realize is if you have 24 hours of growth after a workout, then what are we doing when we're sleeping for 6 to 8 hours at night? Most of us aren't having anything before bedtime. Most of your athletes might be having something, but probably junk food, not necessarily a high protein meal. So if you've got 24 hours for growth, why wouldn't you use the 8 hours that you're sleeping? So we know that protein digestion can work while you're sleeping, but it slows down while you're sleeping. So what some studies have shown, Luke Van Loon is a very prominent protein researcher, and so what he did is he took a group and gave a larger dose of casein protein, which is a much slower digesting protein, right before bed, and found that they were able to use all of that protein during sleep. So rather than 8 hours of basically doing nothing and not building any muscle mass, you can use that 8 hours, have a high protein meal before bedtime, and utilize that for growth. Now, casein was the supplement that was used. I'm not telling your athletes to take casein, but what they can do is realize that milk or dairy is about 8% casein. So it's a slower digesting protein. So they could take a larger dose of yogurt, milk, Nutopia is popular here at HEB and all that. Some of those milk-type proteins, and they can utilize that before bedtime to help with growth. Now, in the research, they use about 0.5 to 0.6 grams per kilogram of protein. So they did the one large dose of protein right before bedtime. And with that, they saw 22% significant, or 22% increase in growth overnight while sleeping compared to the placebo group. So it's something to consider to utilize also. Pre-workout. Protein before workouts isn't necessary. But carbohydrates before workout, this is something I would like to promote. First off, it's just beneficial in the sense that you want them to have energy before they go lift. I know a lot of them are going to be doing summer lifting programs at their high schools this summer, and some of that's going to be taking place at 7 and 8 in the morning. And a lot of those kids don't like to have something beforehand. But it'd be beneficial for them to do that. The reason being for that is when you have carbohydrates, we know that that stimulates insulin, right? When insulin is stimulated, proteolysis, so the breakdown of protein, goes down. If the protein breakdown goes down, then that creates a more positive balance. So remember I talked about net protein balance earlier. Okay, so net protein balance is the difference between muscle protein synthesis and muscle protein breakdown. So if insulin being stimulated decreases net protein or the muscle protein breakdown, then in turn that's going to create a more positive balance. So having carbohydrates before a workout not only is going to increase their energy, but it's also going to improve it because it's going to help increase the breakdown. Post-resistance exercise recovery, again, they don't need much. But taking in a quality form of protein, whether it be whey or dairy, taking it in at about 0.25 to 0.3 grams per kilogram is enough protein. Carbohydrates are not a necessity after a workout, but they can be beneficial. Most of your athletes are going to be doing not only resistance training, but also some running. So carbohydrates to help resynthesize glycogen is important, but also there will be some glycogen breakdown during resistance training, so it's helpful for that set. So what type of protein is best? So this is a graph of the start or the initiation of muscle protein synthesis after workout. So we talked about leucine trigger point. So leucine triggers the growth of muscle protein synthesis. In this particular case, whey protein initiates that growth much more rapidly compared to soy or casein protein. So whey protein is going to be your best bet after a workout. Now, it's not the only option. I'm comfortable with whey protein for high school athletes, it's just a generic whey protein, but they don't need much more than 20 to 30 grams for any of them. Even high school girls may need not much more than 15 grams. Recovery drinks such as Gatorade Recover is a perfectly fine option. But also, you can do the same trick with milk. So there's been studies done using milk before, 20 ounces of milk, 20 ounces of chocolate milk, that would be ample enough protein, and that can stimulate growth. So putting it all together, what we want to do is we want to increase our calorie intake. We want to take in enough protein. For most athletes, that's going to be 20 to 30 grams every 3 to 4 hours, about 4 times in the day, plus one last large dose of protein, of a slow digestion protein before bedtime, if possible. If you cannot do that large of a dose before bedtime, what they can do is just break it down into 6 small meals every 3 to 4 hours that they're awake, or every 3 hours that they're awake. And that would be just as fine as well. A basic guideline for this, 20 to 30 grams worth of eggs and or dairy in terms of protein for breakfast. So not skipping breakfast. Make sure that you're providing quality carbohydrates to go along with that, oats, grains, fruits, etc. 3 to 5 ounces of lean meat with each of your lunch and dinner. Some sort of recovery drink, whether it's whey protein or milk, after the workout. And then a large dose of dairy or casein protein before bedtime. And then filling in the gaps with quality carbohydrate type snacks, so fruits, grains, etc. And then And in this particular case, I'm not going to go through the whole thing. I'll let you read through it. But this is a 140-pound athlete, and what I've done is, based on the calculations that I gave earlier, so assuming this is a wide receiver, we're looking at 7 to 8 grams per kilogram of carbohydrates, roughly 1.6 to 1.8 grams of protein per day, and then an additional 20 grams of protein per meal, with an additional 30 grams of protein or so before bedtime, and then so on and so forth. And then it basically breaks that down and what that would look like between breakfast, lunch, snacks, recovery drinks, and then pre-bedtime. So it's easy enough to do. It's taking in quality protein, it's spacing it out, it's taking in enough calories, and not focusing so much on just lunch and dinner and their supplements. Because essentially what's happening when they're doing that is they're wasting a lot of the protein that they're taking in. Focus on spacing the protein out, making it more quality. This is my information. If you have any questions, obviously I'll be outside if you have questions that you want to ask me, or if you have questions up here. But this is my Twitter. I'm Brian, tweet out for you on social media. Different articles of all sorts of different types, related to nutrition, health, etc. And then also my email address if you have any questions or any help for me. Okay?
So this is Dr. Mark Albrock with U of H Sports Medicine, or U of H Master of Athletic Training Program. I'm a clinical coordinator, and Bill, since you're sitting there,
Bill Hill from Pasadena High
School. He's going to be helping us out. And we're sitting here with Brett Singer. He's a registered dietitian with the Rural Sports Medicine Clinic. Could you just give us a brief background of your education, where you come from, and then why you went into dietetics?
So I am, my background is I went to Texas Christian University at TCU and did my undergrad in nutrition there. I'm currently working on my master's right now at TWU. I'll be done there in December. Been a registered dietitian for about 4 years now. I started off in clinical working in Memorial Hermann Texas Medical Center. So working on oncology, trauma, etc. for nutrition, and then eventually moved on to sports nutrition, where I've been here for a little over a year now, and then also a board-certified sports dietitian as well. So that's kind of my education, why I got into this. Love sports, wanted to play sports, knew I couldn't, and decided to do nutrition instead. So I decided that was my route, and I didn't want to be a strength coach, and there was very few guy dietitians, so I figured that was an easy route to go, and it was something I was interested in, so I went that route instead.
So here's my first question to you.
Yeah.
Why do I care about lean muscle mass? I can watch something on TV that's getting for $19.95 plus shipping and handling. I'm going to take this product, and I'm going to lose 30 pounds in 30 days. Yeah. What do you say about that?
Perfect. I try and tune that out as much as possible. I try and ignore that stuff as much as I can, just because it gets me annoyed and frustrated. But
Can you tell us why? Because that's the key point. And I agree with you 100%. Yeah. But what is it about that? Why are they allowed to say that? And why is it that that stuff doesn't work as well, but they can still say it does?
So the way it is, at least for supplements, there is a law called the basically. So Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act in 1994, and when that was started, basically they gave rules of what you could and couldn't say, and we have something called structure function claims in supplements. And what a structure function claim is, it's a generic claim, and so long as your claim is generic and your supplement isn't harming anyone or killing anyone, then it's okay to say whatever you want. So I can say it makes you feel better or makes you get stronger or jacked or shredded, or as long as I use a generic term that's not a clinical definition of anything, you can say whatever you want and nothing can happen to that company. And then to further that point, what I try and stress to all of my supplement users is that the burden of proof for any supplement is actually on the United States, and not actually on, it's on the FDA, and it's not actually on the supplement company themselves. So if a supplement is found to harm someone, the FDA actually has to prove that it harmed that person and the supplement company doesn't have to prove that it didn't. So they can continue to sell the supplements that's been on the market. So that happened earlier this year. DMAA, or dimethylamine, was on the market in a couple different supplements. It was a drug that was banned in the 60s. And they continue to sell it. A couple different supplement makers continue to sell it despite FDA telling them to take it off because their companies can't prove that it caused heart attacks. So therefore, we're just going to continue to sell the product. So generic claims are really frustrating, and people fall into that trap all the time. I have so many clients that come to me with every supplement possible under the sun, and some of which I've never heard of in my life.
And then
I'm trying to read, you know, studies. And some of the studies are going to be rat studies, and it's just going to be very minuscule amounts of evidence.
You segue to my next question. Before we get to the lean model, do Americans need the supplements, in your opinion?
They need supplements? No. No, they don't need supplements. Not really. It's just you can focus on your diet. I mean, that's the thing I try to emphasize the most is we focus so much on the little tiny details and trying to find the shortcuts when, in actuality, all of us are pretty poor with our diet. If we could just focus on getting that right first, then you can start to work on the other stuff. If you're still deficient in something, or you may need something for whatever reasons, but I think most of us can improve our diet first and our exercise habits first, and then we can start focusing on other things. But until then, there's really no reason to supplement unless there's, you know, specific circumstances where maybe someone requires it for whatever reason.
And what would you say the biggest, when you say we need to fix our diet, what is the biggest fix? Is it still like too high fat? Is it high sodium? Is it not enough protein? What do you see?
I think it's different for everyone. I think people skip too many meals. I think people make a lot of mistakes with too many processed foods. I think portion control is always an issue. I think not enough people are preparing foods themselves. There's too much reliance on going out to eat all the time. It depends. Every person, including myself, has our faults of what we could do better. So there's a number of things that we could do a lot better. So, but those are the kind of portion control and lack of ability to prepare food for themselves, I think, are really the things that are the biggest issues that we see in the American diet right now.
So you just gave a talk to a bunch of basically athletic trainers about lean body mass. And like I alluded to somewhat jokingly before, is you see a lot about lean body mass and how to fix it on TV. Besides the advertising, what do you see as the current trends in terms of research or whatever? What is the current hot topic, would you say, in lean body mass improvements? Is it a supplement? Is it a new kind of, you know, is it still on the paleo kind of diet, the Atkins diet, or is it a different workout? What do people come to you most often with and say, does this really work?
The trend I see in populations right now is pre-workout supplement drinks, I think, is one of the big things that we see, which are very poorly researched, and that's where we start to see much of the concerns that I kind of mentioned earlier. So the DMAA that was found in pre-workout supplements, there was another one earlier this year that there was methamphetamines found in that supplement.
So
there's a couple of supplements that have found methanols in their pre-workout supplements. So that's a trend I see in populations. Trends in research, in that researchers are tending to talk about, there's a lot more emphasis on protein spacing, quality protein, and leucine being an important amino acid. So that's what we tend to see in the research. So two different concepts. You see the supplement concept and the population of clients I tend to work with, over-reliance on that. And then in the research field, we see more on quality of protein and how to space it and portion control.
And that's actually a big point, because you say quality of the supplements. There is no FDA regulation.
No.
How do people know?
There's not. And there's actually, there's some evidence out there, well, there is. We know that even batch to batch on some supplements may be completely different. So there's not a lot of regulation on it. That's kind of what I mentioned earlier on the structure function claim. So as long as you make your generic claim, you're okay. Any of us can make a supplement and put it on the market. As long as you submit your generic claim to the FDA within 30 days of putting that supplement on the market, they're not going to do anything about it. So, in other words, I can go to my garage and make a supplement and put in the mark as long as I have the financial ability to do that.
As long as I put in the thing to the FDA within 30 days before I put it in the market.
It's okay. As long as
I use the generic.
Correct. Generic claim. And if nothing happens, now.
As long as nothing happens.
As long as nothing serious happens. Because if something kind of semi bad happens, then the supplement company doesn't have to really report it. So they're allowed, like they're suggested to report that, but they're not.
What do you mean, athlete or something happens in their manufacturing?
Anyone. No, any person. Okay. So if someone gets just somewhat sick, then they don't have to necessarily report it, although it's suggested that they do, but why would you if you don't have to? If something happens like liver failure or death, then, and they find out that it was that supplement that caused it, then that would lead to something. But even then.
And that's probably a years and years of risk to actually definitively link liver disease to your supplement.
Yeah, it was one.
I'm not going to liver disease.
Yeah, there was one earlier this year that was really. I don't remember where. I think it was CBS wrote the article, or someone like that wrote it. And it was a supplement. There's a supplement on the market right now that's called Graze. It's a pre-workout supplement, and they were found to have meth in that pre-workout supplement. But the story, the background story on that particular supplement, was that particular supplement maker had actually been in prison prior to making this supplement, and he'd been in prison. Because a while back ago he'd taken pesticides and put them in capsule form and sold them as a weight loss supplement.
And why would he do that? Was there a pesticide that actually affected metabolism, or obviously he didn't just randomly.
I honestly don't know. The pesticide was actually a drug in the 30s, I think, or something like that. It was a very long time ago, but it was found to be very unethical.
Okay.
Harmful.
So he took a drug that was long ago shown to cause weight loss.
It was banned.
Wow.
Well, and I don't think it was really for weight loss back then either, to be fairly honest. And then,
I don't think anybody back in the 30s was interested in weight loss.
Well, and so he posed as a farmer, because you can buy that pesticide only for farming purposes and then capsule it with baking soda or baking powder or something like that, sold it on the market. Someone died from it. Went to prison for 2 years. They got out of prison earlier because that person... they were trying to commit suicide, so you get the full effects of that. And then back on the market, opens up a new supplement company, creates one of the highest selling pre-workout supplements on the market, and there you have it. So very minimal regulation to answer your question.
And so if you recommend a supplement for somebody, do you recommend I won't say a brand, but is there a standard that there's a company that tries to give some credibility to them?
You know, there's different supplements that you can use that you can feel pretty comfortable with. You know, you can check out supplements that are NFS certified. You can, you know, there's different websites that you can use that I have access to that can be used to help determine if the supplements are safe. But there's different companies. You know, EAS, I believe, is related to Abbott Nutrition now. Abbott is the same company that makes Ensure. So the same type of supplement that you would make for... you know, that we will provide hospital patients. So I feel pretty comfortable with that. Muscle Milk is another one that's provided at all colleges at U of H, I'm sure, and everywhere else. Muscle Milk Collegiate is a supplement that's provided there. So there are companies out there that you can feel pretty comfortable with. But a lot of these random supplements that you just find that are kind of in and out of the market very quickly are the ones to be a bit concerned about.
So you talked, like we said, about lean muscle mass, and so obviously lean muscle mass is a tremendous health benefit. Is what do you, from a dietetic standpoint, you know, people say, well, you lift weights. What can they do in conjunction with that from a dietetic standpoint to help improve? I mean, obviously you're not going to get big overnight, but you know, you want to give the best scenario. So do you recommend sticking with that and control your diet? Do you recommend weightlifting or whatever? Plus supplements, what is your official stance on that?
To me, like I said before, it's you focus on diet first. Let's get that fixed, and then from there we can focus on supplements later if we need to. You have to do both. You can't just do a poor resistance training program and eat healthy and hope for the best, and you can't do a good resistance training program and eat poorly and hope for anything. You really need to combine both of those two things. The first thing you've got to do, along with the appropriate resistance training, is taking in enough calories. If you're taking in too little calories, you're going to have a hard time of gaining any muscle. So taking in ample calories and then making sure you're taking in quality protein. So that's the topic of my presentation today. So your meats, eggs, dairy, soy, those are quality proteins, they're complete proteins. So they contain all the essential and non-essential amino acids. So incorporating them as part of your diet throughout the day, as opposed to one or two lunch meals, is what's going to be helpful for growing lean body mass. So a major mistake that a lot of people make is that they take in their full protein intake in one or two meals. And what we're seeing is that there is some point where you're not utilizing all that protein the way that you would like to be. So once you exceed that amount, you're essentially oxidizing and excreting some of that protein out. And so what we'd rather do is, in order to get the most bang for your buck, rather than take in all that protein in one or two meals, space it out adequately to where you're having protein every 3 to 4 hours while you're awake, and that way you're building muscle mass with each of those meals. When you're taking in one or two meals, you're not going to be growing as much of the day. So what you have to think of it is after every workout, you have 24 hours to grow. So that's what the anabolic window is. And so utilize that full 24 hours to grow from that workout, not just the first 30 minutes after the workout.
And what about these high-protein diets where they have no choice but to take protein all day? Is that, I mean, not do you recommend them necessarily, but does that affect lean muscle mass? Is there a point where you over-metabolize? I know you're just talking about kidney, issues with kidneys.
I don't worry about kidney health as long as the individual is healthy. I'm not worried about that. We haven't seen any real research to back that claim, but what I will say is that taking in a large portion of the protein is okay, but there is a point where you're exceeding the limit where you don't need to be. We're not getting any benefit out of it. It may not harm you per se, but it's not going to provide any benefit. And for us, it's about 1.8 grams per kilogram, and to make that more simplistic, really less than a gram per pound of body weight is what you can take in. So what you hear in the gyms is all take at least a gram per pound of body weight, and actually that's significantly more than you need. So realistically, about 1.8 grams per kilogram is about the max that you would need to take in, and then spacing that out, every 3 to 4 hours. So basically 20 to 30 grams for most athletes, what that's going to look like, unless they're just an exceptionally large athlete like an offensive lineman. 20 to 30 grams is about the max that they would need of quality protein, though.
And is there, obviously you get protein from so many sources. Uh-huh. Is there, obviously I've heard of chicken breasts or lean meat. Is there a difference without excluding performance, you don't want to eat something really heavy before, but is there a big deal on what kind of protein you take in, or do you really recommend lean meats?
Lean meats, eggs, dairies, soy, those are all good options. So those are all complete proteins. So it's up to the individual themselves. Roughly 3 ounces of chicken is going to be about the same as 3 ounces of fish, and it's going to be about the same as 3 ounces of meat. It's not going to be much of a difference in terms of the quality of the protein or the quantity of the protein. About 3 ounces is going to be about the same for either one. So that's kind of my focus is taking it in the quality form with those options.
Any other questions? No, just as far as asking or giving the high school kids recommendations, because they all like to do these protein shakes. Uh-huh. And you said EAS and a few of the others. But as far as what I'm getting from you is to tell them to fix their diet first, make sure they're eating.
Yeah.
Because all these kids, especially the school I work at, the income level is very low. Uh-huh. These kids don't eat like they should eat. Uh-huh. So what kind of foods could I suggest to kids who are on the just above poverty levels as far as athletes, as far as it's not going to be really expensive, not hard for a high school kid to make, when you're looking at my school is Hispanic, majority, so they stay away from the Mexican type foods.
Right.
So what suggestions could I give?
To me, don't skip meals. So that's a trend I see in a lot of high schools.
They don't eat breakfast.
Breakfast is never. So remember what I talked about. So you've got 24-hour window for growth. So if they worked out at 3 p.m. today, then that breakfast meal tomorrow morning is potentially every bit as important as right after that workout. Mm-hmm. So their breakfast tomorrow morning is crucial to have something. So if you're trying to grow throughout the 24-hour period, then utilize breakfast because you don't want to skip out on that. So some sort of dairy or egg for breakfast. So even if you're on a school lunch program, there's going to be dairy available for there. Milk is a quality protein.
Oh, yeah, we got it.
Right. And so we know that's helpful. So taking in that, taking in some form of meat, ideally not fried, but grilled, baked, sauteed, something, some type of meat with your lunch or your dinner, as opposed to a recovery workout drink, you know, like a protein shake. You know, if that's not available, that's not going to be really horrible for most cases. Milk is just as easy. Whole milk has been shown to be very beneficial in terms of growth. Even a smaller dose of there was a study at UT Galveston where they used essentially 8 ounces of whole milk in comparison to, I think it was 20 ounces of low-fat skim milk. And actually with that whole milk, they had just as much growth compared to the larger dose of skim milk. So potentially for lean body mass, even whole milk would be a potential option for a recovery drink. And then again, having some sort of protein for dinner, whether it's, you know, ideally some sort of meat, 3 to 5 ounces there as well. So
yeah,
not skipping meals.
So they work out early in the morning.
So for me, I would have something light beforehand if they can, if they're doing fruit, you know, some sort of small piece of fruit beforehand, and then having some sort of recovery meal afterwards. So having their breakfast then, or having their meal, their milk, or some sort of, along with some sort of grains after the workout itself. Because you want the protein, you want the milk, you also want to get some sort of carbohydrates also to help replenish the
peanut butter.
Peanut butter is an option. I would incorporate it as part of it, potentially, but I still want, I want to have some sort of quality protein. So whether it's, you know, the dairy, the eggs, or
is
an option. The reason, again, for that is because that's going to contain all the essential and non-essential amino acids. And what we find is that leucine is the key amino acid. And leucine is going to be found in a lot larger dose in those types of proteins compared to things like grains or nuts or nut butters. And so leucine triggers the start of growth. So if you don't get enough of that, then you're going to have a hard time growing after work. So that's where dairy and meats can be beneficial. And affordable. It's not, you know, it's not hard to do that, and that's something that we can make work compared to these $3 to $5 recovery drinks. You know?
That's true. Yeah. Any other any questions by chance? Well, Brett, we really thank you for taking your time.
Yeah,
you had a good talk.
Thanks
and
for coming.
Thanks
for having me.
We had a nice pool of athletic trainers to talk from. So I'd like to thank Pasadena High School for setting this up. I'm Mark Madlock with University of Sports Medicine. I'm with Bill Hale from Pasadena High School. And Brett Singer is here to talk about lean body mass for the first time.
Yep. Thanks.